On this episode of Still Loading, Doki Doki Mario? Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, we are continuing. This is the second to last episode of Mario Month, and we've talked Super Mario Odyssey. We've talked Super Mario Bros. 1, so logically, we're going to continue on in the series and talk Super Mario Bros. 2. But as you all know, I'm not a speedrunner, so I can't do this alone. And with me today is Super Mario Bros. 2 speedrunner, Kurt. Kurt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you again for coming on. So we've been doing all speedrunning here on for this month of Still Loading. And Super Mario Bros. 2, it originally released as a game called Doki Doki. I mean, I guess this is something that I feel is very common to people in our community. But for those who don't know, Super Mario Bros. 2 was originally a game in Japan called Doki Doki Panic. And when the actual Super Mario Bros. 2, what we know as the Lost Levels, came out in Japan, it was relentlessly difficult, and it was even hated by the Japanese public, let alone what the American public would have done to it if it had been released here in the States, or in North America. So they decided to scrap that release in the US, and they decided to basically take a game, an existing game called Doki Doki Panic, and then swap the sprites out. And with Mario sprites, take all the existing game characters and then swap it out with Mario characters. But in doing so, it kind of created a very unique sequel to Super Mario Bros. Because now, instead of only being able to control Mario, you had four different characters, including Mario, you can control Mario, Luigi, for the first time ever, Peach, and Toad. And they all had different attributes. And that's actually kind of, it's interesting how they, just by the pixel swaps, the sprite swaps, the characteristics of these of what they attributed to each of these Mario characters have pretty much stayed with them for the rest of the Mario series, even up to Super Mario 3D World. Peach can jump and float. Luigi jumps the highest. Toad runs the fastest, but is not the best jumper. And Mario is a little bit of everything. And that started off here. I don't remember actually when Doki Doki Panic came out. Do you know when Doki Doki Panic originally released? I'm blanking on this.
I want to say 87, so a year before Mario 2, but I'm not positive on that. But yeah, to your point, it's a really interesting history with how Doki Doki Panic in Japan became Mario 2 in the United States. So if I'm allowed to ramble about this,
correct. 87 in Japan, and the American version came out in 88. So yes, dude, go into it.
Okay. So yeah, anytime you see a Mario 2 video on YouTube or something, if you peruse the comments, there's always going to be some wise-timers saying, oh, this is just Doki Doki Panic. It's a reskin. It's a ROM hack. It's this, it's that. But Doki Doki Panic actually started as a Mario prototype. Basically, what happened was, Mario 1 was such a huge success between, Mario 1 and Game Boy Tetris. Those two games arguably saved the video game industry in the United States. Yes. And so it was a no-brainer to come out with a sequel for Mario 1. And so they immediately had people working on different ideas. And sort of the biggest thing with Mario 1 was that it had smooth horizontal scrolling, which was not at all common for console games at the time.
It was barely even possible on the NES without the additional EEPROM chip that the original SMB had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, most games at the time were very room-based. You entered a room on one side and you went to the other side. So Mario 1 was really interesting that it was just one big long room that scrolled smoothly. And so their original idea for when they were thinking what they wanted to do with the sequel was, so Mario 1 had horizontal scrolling. What if we made a more vertical platforming game? We could have puzzles where you have to stack blocks, maybe jump on enemies, climb vines and ladders and things like that. They wanted it to be a co-op game, kind of like Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, where you could throw each other. But you know, at the same time, they were working on the Famicom disk system and they needed a Mario title at launch, and they still had way too much to do on this prototype game. So that got scrapped before it ever was finished. You know, and they had already worked on porting Mario 1 to arcades as versus Mario Brothers, which included some more difficult levels. They wanted people, you know, chewing through quarters and stuff. And and so they had this concept in their head that they can take Mario 1, make it more difficult, and then produce that rather quickly. So, you know, what we know as the Lost Levels, which in Japan is just Mario 2, was actually developed from start to finish in only 4 months.
Because there was, I actually didn't know that.
There was so little they needed to do. They didn't need to make new music. They needed to make.
They didn't even have to do. They didn't even change the sprites out. It was all pretty much the same assets.
I'm trying to think if, like, there's a Bowser that's a different color, but.
And a mushroom. They have the poison mushroom that's a different color as well.
Yeah, the poison mushroom and then some of, like, the background textures are pretty much the only, like, fully new graphical things. There are some different mechanics, like the wind and you know, bouncing off enemies and stuff like that. But for the most part, this was a very easy game they could produce and have ready in time for the disc system launch. And then so a lot of people are familiar that Nintendo America's de facto game tester, Howard Phillips, declared the Lost Levels to be too difficult for American audiences, that it's needlessly punishing. And people say that's the only reason that Mario 2 in, you know, Western markets wasn't the same as the one in Japanese markets.
And Howard Phillips, for those who don't know, was the guy who headed up Nintendo Power. And, like, Nintendo of America, well, he was one of the higher ups at Nintendo of America. And he's also famous for starting Nintendo Power, or one of the main people who helped start Nintendo Power in the U.S.
Yeah, and I believe he started as just like a warehouse worker and ended up working his way up.
Apparently played every game. He's quoted as playing every game that was ever released at the time that he worked there. Once he quit, then he no longer played every single NES game, but he played and beat every NES game is his claim.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that. So at the time, the president of Nintendo of America, Arakawa, I believe, like really valued
Noro Arakawa.
So when he said that Western audiences probably wouldn't like the Japanese Mario 2, you know, they took that to heart. And so that was one reason, but also this was already, you know, mid 87, early 88. And for them to take a disc system game and get it up and running on a cartridge for the NES, it was probably going to be late 88 or early 89 till it was out. And by that time, the competition is Mega Man 2 and 3. You got, like, you know, Capcom's just killing it with just gorgeous games. Like Bionic Commando was out around then. Just a lot of more visually enticing games, so that if 4 years after Mario 1, they released a game that looked just like Mario 1, it was potentially just going to flop. You know, what's new about this? It's just harder and, you know, for that reason, less fun. Like, why don't I play Mario 1? So it was kind of both of those reasons. The difficulty was one part, and then also just that it was going to be a little underwhelmed by the time they could get it on cartridge. But yeah, so then there was a big tech expo called the Dream Factory, and Fuji TV was like the big sponsor for this, and they had four mascots, and they approached Nintendo about having a video game to tie into this big tech expo. And so this was also kind of on short notice. So Nintendo couldn't just make something from scratch for this, but they're like, and, you know, behind closed doors, they're like, hey, we got this old Mario prototype. We can probably put enough bells and whistles on this, tie it into the event, and get it out in time. So that's what they did. They ended up resurrecting this Mario 2 prototype. They used the four mascot characters from Fuji TV as the four playable characters. And one of the inspirations for this tech expo was Carnival. And so they wanted to kind of include some of that flair as well. So they have these Arabian mascots, but they also want all these decorative masks. And so you end up with a game that has all sorts of mask imagery. You know, the enemies have masks. There are masks that chase you. Like, everything revolves. You go through a big mask at the end of levels, but it also has like a very Arabian feel to match the mascots for Fuji TV at the time. And so that's kind of where Doki Doki Panic sprang from. is a basically a hastily finished Mario 2 prototype.
It's really, it's funny because it, you're right. Like a lot of people, I feel like this is, I referenced this in last week's episode when I was talking to Ace and I was talking about how it's so easy for us to get like wrapped up in like what's common knowledge in the community you're a part of. And like this North American Super Mario Bros. 2 is actually a Japanese game called Doki Doki Panic that they just swap sprites out. That's a very common thing. Like everyone in the retro game community, by and large, I'm sure there's some people who don't, but for the most part, people who interact in this community a lot know that already. So when we talk about it, it feels very kind of like, I feel like there's this like tendency in a lot of communities, but in games, but it happens a lot in gaming where it's like, you want to show like, oh no, I'm legit. I know what I'm talking about. So you always feel like you have to get more and more obscure. And sometimes you lose some interesting stories. And this is an interesting story. Like this is something that like it's been talked about a lot. The gaming historian did a whole video on this.
That's a good episode.
It's a very good episode. But it deserves to be talked about because I think I was listening to another podcast called Retronauts. I think they said this on there. This isn't my own thought. So if it wasn't from them, I don't remember who I got this from. But if it wasn't for North American Super Mario 2, I don't think Nintendo would have given Mario enough license to be as weird as it got in later games. Like if Super Mario Bros. 2, the actual one, got released in North America just without any alterations, just as is, I don't think Mario would be as popular as it is now because this game was so different, but still felt Mario enough that it works. And it at the time, I feel like, you know, by changing it where like now when you jump on enemies, you don't kill them. You can pick them up and throw them. The music still feels Mario enough. And on top of it, graphically, it's a huge step up from Mario 1. All of a sudden, these sprites now don't look like sprites. They look like cartoons. They look like actual little like chibi cartoons that you can control on screen. And I feel like because of Mario 2, because of the success of North American Mario 2, it gave Nintendo the, and once again, this isn't my thought, but I agree with it. Like it gave them the license to be like, okay, we can change things up. Like we don't have to keep doing everything. Just iterate on the same idea. We can give Mario tons of ideas. We can do tons of things with him. I wonder if the success of this game helped spawn Mario to become a mascot more than he already was, like in the same vein that Mickey Mouse became the mascot of Disney, where Mickey Mouse doesn't just have his own cartoons. He also is tied in with this thing. He's, you know, like how often did you see Mario in Tetris? You would see Mario in like, then you got Dr. Mario later on you have all the sports games. Like, I really feel like that idea of like being able to put Mario, no pun intended, but have Mario wear a lot of hats. I feel like if it wasn't for this game, I don't know if Nintendo would be as bold or do it as quickly as they did. It probably would have happened at some point. But like,
yeah, it feels like
totally different.
You know, Nintendo had definitely been plastering Mario in basically every game they can, whether it's like the referee and, you know,
yeah, Punch Out.
I think the characters started to get personalities in Mario 2. Just
100%.
You know, the floating ability of Princess has become so iconic and that she can, you know, just like, see you later, fellas, like I'm off. or Luigi with his flippy legs and he's, you know, kind of goofy and clumsy. And, you know, it definitely, I mean, granted, in the Japanese Mario 2, you know, Luigi also had the big jumps and was a little loosey goosey, but, they definitely solidified where they wanted to go with the franchise, I think. So, you know, it's, on one hand, it's a bit of a black sheep. It's kind of like Zelda 2, where it was very out of the box. They wanted to experiment a bit, see what worked, what didn't work for the franchise. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, both the Super Nintendo and Game Boy iterations of Zelda, you know, they returned more to the Zelda 1 feel, but they learned from Zelda 2. So, you know, Mario 3, Mario World, you know, definitely more similar to Mario 1 than Mario 2. But, you know, they learned a lot. You could jump off vines, you could pick things up, you could, you know, they introduced Shy Guys and Birdo and Bob-ombs and and all sorts of things that kind of became mainstays that, you know, after just one game, Mario didn't really have an identity. So they had license to be weird and goofy. And, you know, at the time, you know, like, yeah, it was a different game, but it was advertised as like a new adventure where you could blast through walls and, you know, dig through the ground and stuff. Like, there are some good commercial reels on YouTube and stuff for Mario 2 where they didn't shy away from it being different. That was the feature, is that it was a new playing experience.
It also, I feel like it benefited from the fact that it didn't have decades of precedent. You know, like now if you play a Mario game and it's not like another, if there's supposed to be like a Super Mario Bros. 4 that comes out, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's not really going to ever be a thing. Probably. That'd be weird if it was. But if they ever make a Super Mario Bros. 4 and it's not like something 3 or World or some other or new Super Mario Bros. Or anything like that, there'd be a lot of people would be upset by that. But since this was only the second game in the series, they could literally, they had license to do whatever the hell they wanted with it. And I feel like it was a weird thing on the NES that a lot of developers did that. You know, Super Mario Bros. 1, one thing. Super Mario Bros. 2, very different. Super Mario Bros. 3, back to what 1 was, but upgraded and different. Castlevania, same thing. You have 1, Simon's Quest is super weird, and then you get to Castlevania 3, which is more like 1. Zelda didn't have a third game on the NES, but you still had Zelda. Then, obviously, Zelda 2, like you mentioned, super weird and different, and then the third Zelda was Link to the Past, which is definitely a huge upgrade, and it was obviously because it was on the Super Nintendo, but it still felt more like the original Zelda than Zelda 2 felt like the original Zelda. So it's interesting to me back on during this time where a lot of developers were like really just throwing shit at the wall and see what stuck. What can we do? And out of all those ones that I mentioned, Simon's Quest and, you know, Zelda 2 and this one, I think North American Mario 2 kind of fits best with its predecessor. Like if it's more with its predecessor than the others fit with their predecessors. Do you agree with that?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it's still a playful, bright colored platformer, you know, primarily aimed at kids.
Yeah. It still has the core platformer tenets for the most part, versus like Zelda 2 added RPG elements, Castlevania 2 added like an open world day and night cycle, like very like ambitious game design for those times. But in any case, so yeah, Mario 2, and in all honesty, so I did an episode on Mario 2 like 3 or 4 years ago. And I think in just the 20 minutes we've been talking about it, I think we've done more research. We've talked more about the history of it than I did on that entire like hour long episode. So very grateful to have you on, Kurt. So let's talk a little bit about you now, though. Let's since we talked about the game a little bit, and a little about the game's history, I think it'd be interesting for the listeners to get to know you a little bit better. How did you get into speedrunning and why Mario 2?
Yeah, you bet. So I'm relatively new to speedrunning. I was ignorant of Twitch and live streams and speedrunning pretty much entirely until maybe like 2016, 2017. I was scrolling YouTube and there was like this clickbaity title, like, "You won't believe how fast they collect all 120 stars in Mario 64. I'm like, "Oh, I bet I'll believe this. Like, come on, I beat that game when I was like 10. So, you know, I watched it and it just kind of blew my mind that anyone could play a video game that well. And Mario 64 is a really good one because you don't have to know a ton about Mario 64 speedrunning to appreciate speedruns of Mario 64.
It's very visually interesting to people who don't know about speedrunning. You can see all the tech right on the screen. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's not super glitch heavy. It's primarily super clean, crisp movement and, you know, exploiting parts of the game that you never would have thought to do on your own. And so this kind of like opened up a new world for me, because suddenly now that I watch this, I was getting other YouTube recommendations, and then suddenly I was seeking it out. I was like, oh, I really liked Mega Man games as a kid. Let's watch some speedruns of Mega Man games. Let's see how fast they can, you know, break these games that made me cry as a kid.
Especially those freaking, like, the zips that they zip across the screen. It always blew my mind when they get trapped inside the, like, the geometry and it zips Mega Man from one side to the other. It blows my mind.
Yeah, and I think I was fully hooked when I found a Games Done Quick video. It was a Mega Man relay race of, like, the classic Mega Man games. And just like, oh, there are multiple people that are this good. And, oh, there are big events that raise millions of dollars for charity and draw large audiences. I was like, this is a real thing. And so I think the first time I was on Twitch, it was to watch ZFG play Ocarina of Time, because that was another one of my childhood favorite games, and I really liked his dry sense of humor and just, like, deadpan delivery of things that I'm not even sure if he means them to be jokes, but it always cracks me up every time. I'd watch a little ZFG, and then I found Mitch Flower Power doing Mario 3 speedruns. I think probably Arcus was somewhere around that time frame for me that I found him. And then I started getting more interested in possibly doing it myself when Darbyan returned from a fairly lengthy break to run Mario Land 2. I ended up meeting some people in the community. This was, like, the first time I interacted in Twitch chat with people. And so, you know, Darbyan had kind of pioneered the Mari Hour, which was completing Mario 1, both Mario 2s, Mario 3, Mario World, and Mario 64 all within an hour.
Whoa, I didn't know that, actually. I know who Darbyan is, but I never heard of the Mari Hour. That's really cool. I'm going to have to find some runs of that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's actually been fairly well optimized. It's not like an unbeatable record at this point, but Young Kitty's a really good guy. I like him a lot. He goes by Pixel Perfect Runs, I think, is the current record holder. But the thoughts are creeping into my mind, like, I wonder if I could beat all those games in under an hour. And so I was thinking about it, and, you know, I played around a little bit on an emulator on my computer with completely legally obtained ROMs, of course.
Of course. If you own the original cartridges, those ROMs aren't illegal. That's in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely transferred that data to my computer myself.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, I started just playing around with it, but I was still mostly a viewer. And then I finally just bit the bullet and got, I picked up a CRT television for free off Craigslist. I had sold my NES collection a few years earlier, but I started rebuying some things, started playing around with Mario 1, you know, found out I could beat it in under 6 minutes fairly easily. You know, the record being a little bit under 5 minutes. So not ideal gameplay, but, you know, I was still pretty impressed and started going a little more, picked up an EverDrive so that I could practice with save state. So an EverDrive is a device that looks like an NES cartridge, but you can, you know, load a game.
Load it up with legally obtained ROMs.
Of course. Yes. And so I could start practicing all these fancy tricks that the top level players were doing, and I decided, you know what, maybe I'm gonna try streaming too. And so I just had a goofy laptop setup that was not at all powerful enough for streaming, had no idea what I was doing, but here I was streaming speedruns of Super Mario Brothers, you know, in an attempt to learn all the games in the Mari Hour. And so after I got a time I was satisfied with in Mario 1, I was like, you know what, Mario 3 was probably my favorite Mario game as a kid. Want to give that a shot. And some of the tricks were making my hands a little sore at the time. And so I was like, you know what? All right, let's shelve that for a while. Let's try Mario 2. And at first I absolutely hated it. It was a game that I enjoyed as a kid, probably not as much as Mario 3, but I really liked Mario 2 as a kid and could actually beat it.
Yeah.
Which I didn't believe in continues as a kid for some reason. So I didn't have a ton of games I beat as a kid. But Mario 2 is one of them. But I started playing as an adult. I'm like, what the heck? This is hard. Like, this is not at all easy.
How did I do this as a kid? I feel like every person, like, around our age is like, how the hell did I do that? I don't understand how I mean, I was telling you off mic, I started with the N64 and there are certain games I played on that. I'm like, maybe I'm just used to modern graphics. I'm like, I don't know how I saw enemies. It's so fuzzy. I know it's a different thing, but it's same idea. Yeah. Like, how the hell did I do this?
Yeah, exactly. And so I was really doubting myself. I was like, oh God, I definitely can't do Mario Hour. Like, am I even ever going to finish a run of Mario 2? And, but I stuck with it for a while. I got a time that I was pretty happy with. It was around 9.5 minutes. So at the time record, I believe was 8 minutes and 17 seconds. So very far off record, but this is a game where there's wide variances in times. And so I was pretty much done with it and I was looking to move on to whatever was next for me. I was thinking about maybe running Mario Land 2 because Darbyan was running it at the time. And I really enjoyed his streams and that community. I'd met some great friends in that community. But then Summoning Salt came out with a YouTube video about the speedrunning history of Mario Brothers 2.
This dude has been mentioned in every episode just about for the original Mario Bros. Like, for a little peek behind the scenes for the listeners, this is actually the last one I'm recording out of Mario Month. But so far, both in Mario 1 and 3, everyone has mentioned Summoning Salt's videos in some way, shape, or form. Go on.
He's put a ton of eyeballs on the retro speedrunning communities. So he's done a great service. And he was talking about the history and going through covering some of the basic glitches and stuff and some of the more groundbreaking accomplishments of the different runners. And it kind of got me amped to keep going. And so I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to push myself a little farther. And there's like an inflection point in Mario 2. Like, when you first start playing it, it is incredibly frustrating. It's difficult. There are a couple spots in the game that are tough to beat if you have not practiced a whole lot. It's very awkward at times. But once you, there's just like a point where, I don't know if it's like Stockholm syndrome or whatever, but like suddenly I could not get enough Mario 2. You know, push myself. I got my time down a little closer to 9 minutes. And then I was again kind of starting to get ready to move on to other projects when Cool Kid, who's the record holder in this game for basically every single category, you know, he sent me a message. He's like, hey, you should watch the Games Done Quick channel tonight. I think there's something you might be interested in. And they were announcing a Speed Seasons event, which was going to be a series of, I think, 8 different games. It was going to be races and you earn points. And then like the top 8 would have like a playoff at the end, basically. And the first game was Mario 2. And Cool Kid was on the channel to kind of show the basics, you know, kind of show everyone the ropes of playing Mario 2. But this was all levels. I had been playing it with using the warps, you know, so I was only playing half the levels. And so this is kind of targeted at beginners. They didn't necessarily want like all the experts to come out and, you know, play this event. It was like a come out, learn, speed run, compete against the other type of thing. And so I was like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's learn the other half of the levels. Let's play it this way. And then, you know, it snowballed and I kept playing it and I kept playing more and I kept finding more categories that I could speed run. And I started making more and more friends in the Mario 2 community. And, you know, next thing you know, I basically spent all of last year playing Mario 2 with a couple exceptions. You know, I briefly played some other games, but, you know, probably 10 or 11 out of the 12 months were spent playing Mario 2 in one way or another. And, you know, I finally am taking another break from the game. I'm playing some Mario 3 right now. I know, huge difference, but yeah, Mario 2 is definitely very near and dear to my heart at this point. Both because it's just a fun game to play. It's joyful, it's playful, but also because I've met so many great people. I would say the majority of my close friends at this point I met through Mario 2, which is,
that's awesome.
If you told me that 2 years ago, I would have just laughed.
It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know about you, but for me, on a personal level, for me, like, I'm very shy in some instances. I know you couldn't tell because I was talking your ear off mic, but like,
Fact check, true.
A lot of it, in all honesty, is part of it's just like I have to be forced, not in a bad way. It's not like I was like forced against my will, but once I'm put in a situation, then it's like, okay, I can talk about anything. But if it's like anytime else, like if I'm, whether it's online or in person, I don't really try to start conversations. I just kind of like, if you want to talk to me, you can talk to me. If not, so I can totally understand from your thought process, at least out beforehand, it's just like, who would have thought that I would have made all these friends from this, when it's just like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just doing this because I want to have fun. How, like, I don't understand how this translates necessarily to friends. And it obviously it has for you. And that's awesome. That's really cool. I feel like it, especially when you become good friends with people online, sometimes depending on the person, obviously, but like, I feel like you almost become closer with them because you don't have like that. If you're able to open up to someone online, it's a little bit different because you have less like, inhibition. I don't know where I'm going with this. I feel like it's easier in some aspects and it's harder in others, you know?
Yeah. Having a screen between you and another person, I think makes it easy, especially for introverts, to open up to other people.
Yeah.
You know, in person, I'm very similar to you in that I don't tend to start conversations. Like, I'm happy to socialize with people and I'm not that awkward most of the time, like a little awkward, but you know, I can pass as an extrovert for half an hour if I need to. But online there's just a higher degree of comfort with, you know, I can type something out and if I don't like the way it sounds, I can just delete it and type it out again until I like the way it sounds. I don't have to be nervous about saying something stupid.
That's why I like podcasts so much. I can just edit out all the stupid shit that I say. All you listeners, you have no idea how many times I stumbled over my words in the intro. It was actually arguably, Kurt knows this because he heard it live. It was honestly probably one of my worst intros of any podcast I've ever done. I'm dead serious. I'm not even, that's not hyperbole. Like it was
a solid 5 out of 10.
Oh, right in the feels. You're not wrong though. You're not wrong. That's the sad part. But no, I feel like with introverts and extroverts though, it's like it's not necessarily are you social or are you not social. It's where do you get your energy from? Because mm-hmm. you could become an extrovert with the right people because you get energy from them. Like your close friends. Like I become an extrovert when I'm with my close friends because I'm comfortable with them. I get energy from them, and therefore I can be more yeah. loud. I can be more boisterous. That's a wrong term, but like I can be more energetic. When I'm not with people I know, that's, I'm an introvert all of a sudden because I don't get energy from them. I don't know you. And mm-hmm. it's the same thing with like, where do you get your energy from? I get energy from, you know, personal time, playing video games, hanging out with my wife. Like that's where I get my energy from. If I had to be on, like, quote unquote, on all the time and socialize with people, I'd be like emotionally drained by the end of the day.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's continue on with this. So we've talked about how you got into speedrunning and why specifically Mario 2, which that was interesting. It'll, I didn't know that you got Stockholmed into it. That's pretty that's pretty interesting. That's a first for the show. You were Stockholmed into loving a game. But let's talk about the speed run itself. So mm-hmm. I was telling you off mic, and I've been referencing a lot of off mic conversations on this episode, but I was telling you off mic that I don't know this game all that well. I've played a lot of Mario 3 and a lot of original Super Mario Bros. Haven't really played a lot of this one. So I guess you've done speed runs for both 1 and 3. I see on your list. Now, I mean, nothing that you've, I don't know how much, actually you just posted 2 days ago your Any% Warp list for Super Mario Bros. 3. What are some of the biggest differences? We'll stick between 1 and 2 because mm-hmm. people haven't heard the third episode yet. What are some of the biggest differences in terms of speed running that you've noticed between 1 and 2?
Yeah, so in Mario 1, the primary goal is seeing how fast you can go to the right without bonking on things, slowing down. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically you start here, you end here, you go in a linear fashion and avoid anything that might slow you down. You know, and then there's also the frame rule system where the game only checks to see if you completed a level every third of a second or so.
The bus analogy that I learned about last week.
Yep, everyone knows.
All my listeners analogy. Learned about as well. I did not know about that.
Yeah. So there are, there aren't really buses in Mario 2 in the same sense. And it's also not just get from one side of the screen to the other as quickly. You know, with the whole idea of Mario 2 was for there to be puzzles and vertical sections. And so you end up backtracking, you end up having to do things that involve slowing down or waiting for something to happen. In some senses, it's a little slower pace than Mario 1 because it's not a constant go, go, go. But in the other sense, every possible moment matters in most cases because, you know, you got to progress through the level and you're going to be changing directions. So you have to do that cleanly. You got to, have good door entries and this and that. And then basically every level also ends with a boss fight. Most levels, it's a Birdo, and Birdo spits out eggs. And so this, it's kind of like a frame rule in that there's a timer that begins at the start of the level, and then Birdo will shoot an egg basically once a second for the red Birdos that shoot out groups of three. For the pink Birdos that just shoot out one egg, it's every 4 seconds, pardon me. You know, so the pink Birdos, it's one egg every 4 seconds. The red Birdos, it's three eggs every 4 seconds. So it's a 1 second break, and then a 2 second break between eggs. And so you're basically trying to get to an ideal egg cycle, which is kind of like a frame rule. But then you actually have to use the egg. You have to throw it at Birdo, and then you have to collect Birdo's orb to open the exit for the end of the level. Orb, indeed.
That's from Super Mario 3, but
So, you know, the boss fight mechanics are interesting because every single frame counts. And then there's also some things that have 1 second of grace. There are some things that, you know, have a little bit more. But for the most part, so enemies spawn when you get close to them, and like as in most video games, you get to a certain point,
especially on the NES, the game
to load them up. And so in Mario 2, enemies' movement is based on the time you spawn them, and then B on how you interact with them.
Okay.
Birdo walks back and forth, right to left, and then so that's based on when you spawn Birdo. But Birdo spits out projectiles on a global timer for that level. And so there are certain tricks where you kind of want Birdo's movement and her shots to kind of line up nicely so that you can do certain tricks. And so there's sometimes some improv where you make a little mistake and you're not going to get the exact pattern you're used to. And so you kind of have to quickly think like, okay, Birdo's not going to be moving to the left when I need her to be moving to the left. So how do I adjust? And then how can I do that without losing time? And so there's a lot of variety in how the runs play out. It's not success or failure. It's how do I minimize the damage from little mistakes I made?
So if I'm understanding this correctly, Birdo will, like most enemies on the NES games, they only spawn when you get close, but her pattern is dictated by how much time, like the amount of time you take to get to her. I know that's a very simplistic explanation of it, but in like a nutshell, that's kind of what it is. Because if you get there too early, then maybe when she spawns, she'll be moving to the right when you want her to be moving to the left. Versus if you got on the correct frame or the correct set of frames, she'd be moving in the direction that you want her to. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yep. Birdo's movement is based on when you spawn her, and Birdo shooting eggs and fireballs is based on a global timer.
That's a pain to keep track of, I feel like.
Yep.
Global timers, I feel like, are one of the tough, like most unsung difficult things to keep in mind for speedrunners. I mean, correct in that? Is that something that it seems from someone who doesn't speedrun, it seems like that's really difficult to keep in mind because you have to like know approximately how long you've been in a level, how long it's going to take you to get to a specific spot. And if you are off, then you have to figure out like something. You see it a lot of times on GDQs. Some runners will just wipe a level just because it'll reset the timer. And mm-hmm. other times they'll say, well, we can't wipe because that timer is going to be fucked up now for the rest of for the rest of the run. So we just got to work through it or something like that. So,
yeah. So it can be difficult, but it's a little more forgiving than, say, Mario 1, where your performance on previous levels can change how things like Hammer Brothers behave in mm-hmm. later levels. So every level is a fresh start in Mario 2. You always start with 2 HP and the level timer starts when you select your character.
Okay.
And so you can completely botch one level, but the next level, you don't have to completely adjust what you do. It's everything is within a level. So if you make a mistake in 1-2, you know, the way you finish 1-2 might change. But when you get to 1-3, you can just go ahead with your 1-3 strats.
Now, unlike Mario 1 is pretty much just like routing there. It's basically non-existent in Mario Run. Or, oh my gosh, Mario 1, because it's just a linear game. Is there any routing type of strategies in Mario 2, or is it also fairly linear?
So it's fairly linear. And, you know, if you're playing any percent, you're going to take the warp zones in 1-3 and 4-2 and play all the other levels. In all levels, you're going to play all levels. And the route through each level is pretty clear cut. What isn't clear cut is character selection a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So there are four different characters with different characteristics. In most levels, you want to use Toad because when Toad's carrying either a block or an enemy, he gets about a 20% speed increase.
What is this, Noah's Ark? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not familiar with that one, no.
There, so quick side tangent history lesson. So there's a game developed for the NES called Noah's Ark. It was made by a company called Wisdom Tree, which was an unlicensed NES developer. So if you buy Noah's Ark, I think it came in part of a pack. I forget exactly what
was
it was.
It part of Bible Adventures, maybe?
Yeah, it's part of Bible Adventures. Okay. That's all right.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And so for those who don't know, in Bible Adventures, Noah just picks up he just yeets the animals straight up onto his head and he carries like five at a time and he runs at the speed of light. I don't think he runs faster with it, but just the idea of Toad sprinting 20% faster reminded me of Noah.
Yeah, another game on that cartridge, if you pick up Baby Moses, I think you also might get a speed increase.
Moses used boost.
Yeah, but it's sort of a carryover from the Doki Doki Panic era of Mario 2, where one of the mascot characters was, you know, this supposed to be this really strong guy. And so the other characters, they slow down a little bit when they carry, you know, quote unquote, heavy objects, which are enemies and blocks. But they wanted to differentiate the strong character, you know, like this guy doesn't jump very well. We got to give him something. And so he can jump a little farther because he's going a little faster while carrying something and he can pick him up real quickly. You know, so fast forward to Mario 2, the US version, you know, they add a run button. So when you add a 20% or so speed boost on that, it adds up in a hurry. But the trade-off is it makes certain parts quite a bit more difficult. You know, if you're going for world record, the things you're doing are very clear cut. But if you're just looking to get a time you're satisfied with, there are some trade-offs. Like maybe you want to use, you know, Princess in a level that has some difficult platforming. You can just float over it. You know, that's a trade-off, but she's not going to get that speed boost. And she also picks up items very slowly. So the boss fights tend to be a bit slower. You know, so it's kind of a trade-off, risk reward. Like, I can do it faster with Toad, but am I likely to do it faster with Toad?
That's interesting. I didn't know that they actually had different picking up speeds. Like, I understood the running speed difference, but I had no idea that like Peach picks up items slower than Toad does or the other characters.
Yeah. And so another thing about the pickup mechanics is when they're in their pickup animation, they don't have a hitbox. And so, so one thing that Princess is good at is not taking damage while picking things up. You know, if you're fighting a Birdo that shoots out a lot of fire, you can just pick up a block while that fire is approaching you and not take damage. And so while it's slower, it ends up being quite a bit easier.
That's really cool. I did not know that.
But there are also parts where a slow pickup speed are a big liability, and you might as well use, you know, Toad or another faster character to, you know, be able to outmaneuver and pick things up quickly.
So if you're running any percent or all levels, ones where you can, categories where you can run with all the characters, how many levels approximately, unless you know the exact number, are you not using Toad for those runs?
In any percent, you typically would use Luigi for 3 levels and Toad for the rest. Am I getting that right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's the end credits will show your contributor score, which is how many levels you beat in the game with each character. And so 0, 3, 5, 0 is the typical count in any percent. So 0 for Mario, 3 for Luigi, 8 for Toad, 0 for Princess. You actually play 10 levels, but you don't finish 2 of them because you take warps. And so those don't count. But typically it's 3 levels with Luigi, 7 with Toad. In all levels, there's the world record contenders would all use the same characters, but there's a much wider variety in who you would use where. There's one level, 5-2, where all 4 characters are viable for various reasons. There's a platforming section at the start that is fairly difficult with Toad, but fastest. And then there's a climbing section on vines where Luigi is by far the easiest. So vine jump mechanics in this game, basically, if you are holding up and either left or right when you exit a vine, you get 3 frames, so about a 20th of a second, to perform a jump. But with Luigi, his physics are that he falls slower, and so those 3 frames become 8 frames.
Oh, wow.
Might not sound like a ton, but in the world of speedrunning, like an 8-frame trick fairly free. And so Luigi can jump up these vines super quickly, but then the boss fight is so awkward with his floaty mechanics. There's a gap in there's a pit in the floor right where you'd want to stand. And so, Toad and Luigi are the most common ones, but Princess is pretty good too. And then Mario actually does pretty well also. So another glitch in the game is called a double jump. And here I'm going down, I'm unraveling all sorts of threads.
By all means, because like we were talking about routing, routing, like you said, it's pretty linear in this. Mm-hmm. It's the bigger difference is just what you decide to do based off the characters you choose. So glitches would be the next thing that I would want to talk about. So we can use this as a totally smooth transition into glitches.
Yeah. So one common glitch that's both used for going fast, but also a lot of times for swag strat, is called a double jump. So your hitbox is, there's kind of, and someone who knows the inner workings of the game is probably going to cringe at my explanation of this, but there are basically 2 hitboxes for everything. One that determines whether or not you're colliding with something and taking damage, and another that's kind of determining where you are. And they overlap, but the one that determines where you are is slightly bigger than the one that determines whether or not you take damage. I think I'm explaining this one kind of correctly. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you are near an enemy and jump, and the hitboxes that determine where you are overlap, but not so much so that the ones that determine whether you not take damage overlap, the game registers briefly that you're on a platform. Because you can stand on enemies in this game. And so you kind of cross that threshold briefly and the game's like, oh, I'm on a platform. And it doesn't check again that you're not on a platform until your Y coordinate starts to decrease. So up until the peak of your jump, the game thinks you're on a platform and you can jump again.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's kind of an awkward trick to learn at first, because you're basically playing chicken with the enemies. You got to get real close to them and almost give them a smooch.
That description where it's like, what's one of the toughest strats you learn from the speedrun game? Smooching enemies.
Yeah, you want to smooch the enemy, but don't hug the enemy.
these are really confusing rules of consent with these enemies in this game. Smooching, yeah, but no hugging.
Subcon is wild here. Subcon being the land where this game takes place, as opposed to the Mushroom Kingdom. But going back to 5-2, if you use Toad, who's the fastest character, but also the most difficult to climb with, there's one jump that's too high for Toad to do without stopping and charging a super jump, which if you hold down after about a second, your character starts blinking and you can jump higher. The fastest way to do that is with a double jump. But if you miss that, you're going to end up losing time. And at that point, it's like, okay, well, maybe I should have just used another character. Mario can make that jump without any difficulty. And he also can do the boss fight pretty well. Because it's very awkward with Luigi and a little awkward with Princess. So Mario ends up being a fairly straightforward character to use in that level, despite not having any real distinguishing characteristics in the game. So Mario is kind of supposed to have average stats across all, you know, kind of all of the different categories. Luigi has a really big floaty jump. You know, Toad's very speedy, and then Princess can float but is slow. And so, you know, the big jumps of Luigi have their spot in the speed run. The faster run speed of Toad obviously has plenty of spots in the speed run. And there are a couple jumps where Princess's floatability versus Luigi's big jump that goes high and far is necessary. Like if there's a low ceiling and a far gap you need to cross, you know, Princess can make that much easier than Luigi. But Mario doesn't tend to have a whole lot of use in the speedrun. He's not that fast.
Yeah.
He doesn't jump that big. And so really the only advantage he has over Luigi is that he doesn't fall as slowly, which doesn't come into play all that often. So there's typically only one level, even in the all levels run, that has 20 levels where you would use Mario. And that's just because there are some fairly big, it's a very vertical level and Mario can make the jumps. And so he just doesn't take as long falling as Luigi. So he ends up being a little faster.
You actually answered a question that I had running in my head, though. I actually didn't know how many levels were in this game in the first place. So there's 20 in the all levels run. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, out of all the categories, I mean, we've only talked a bit about any percent and all levels, but there is a ton of categories in this game. And as I described in the last, and well, pretty much all these episodes, categories are all the different limitations that speedrunners put on themselves in order for when they are beating a game or what, or determining what the win condition is for that specific category. And what I find interesting about Super Mario Bros. 2 is that because it has all these different characters, you can basically have, you know, all levels with a specific character or any percent with a specific character. And also, like, from what I can see here, you're currently eighth and ninth, and eighth in all levels and ninth in any percent, but you are in between second and third place in a lot of the any percent for character specific runs. So you're in second place for any percent Luigi, any percent Toad, and then also any percent Toad All-Stars, any percent Mario for Mario All-Stars. What out of all the different categories here, I didn't list all the ones that you have records in, but out of all the categories, which are some of your favorite and which are some of the most challenging?
So I really like using Toad. He's a very responsive character. He's a very fast character. So I really enjoy the Toad only categories. But to your point, there are a ton. And then you also kind of referenced All-Stars there. So there are multiple versions of this game. There's two versions for the NES, and then it later got re-released in Japan as Super Mario USA, which is, other than the title screen, identical to one of the two NES versions. The only difference between the two NES versions being that they patched one potential softlock, but it makes it slightly slower, but it's very inconsequential. We're talking like a fraction of a second for an entire run.
Okay.
And then, but there's also the All-Stars version. So it got re-released on the Super Nintendo and Super Famicom as a 16-bit game, and it is completely different. The, you know, for a casual playthrough, it's basically indistinguishable, but there are glitches that do work on NES that don't work on All-Stars, and there's one or two that do work on All-Stars that don't work on NES, but for the most part, they did a decent job of patching a lot of speedrun-friendly glitches. So it changes the routing a decent bit, and there's also a save and quit feature. So you can end up saving, quitting, going back to a level before where you warp to, and so you can get an extra warp in. So you use three warp zones instead of two in the All-Stars Any% run, with a little bit of menuing and saving and quitting in between there. But I think you only end up playing eight levels versus 10. Don't quote me on that. I don't run a ton of the All-Stars version.
Okay.
But it's just a huge expansive difference. So you first kind of got to figure out which version of the game you find more enjoyable. I would say probably 80% or so of runners find the NES version a little more fun to play just because there's a wider variety of glitches and things. But a lot of people love the All-Stars version and they like the enhanced graphics and some of the quality of life features. You know, Infinite Continues is another nice aspect of All-Stars when you're first starting out.
Oh, yeah. There's not unlimited continues.
Yeah, you can hard game over in the NES version, which in my mind potentially makes it more difficult than the lost levels when you're first learning. But yeah, so that's like the first hurdle you need to get over. And then I would say most people start with either Any% or maybe sometimes Any% Princess only just because they feel it's a little less intimidating to get into. But after that, it's all personal preference. There's, you know, a wide variety of ways you can beat the game. You can only use one character. You can not limit yourself on characters. You know, whether or not you want to use warp zones. And that's one of the things that kept me in the game for so long, is that I could play all these different categories and get a different experience in each one.
I didn't even think of that. There's a lot of variety for a lot of games. You pretty much have like one or two most games, obviously the most popular category in most games is Any% or completion, you know, all levels, right. 100%, whatever that may mean for those specific games. Mm-hmm. And in this game, you have five different versions of that. Theoretically, you have one where you can use all the characters and then four different ones for individual characters. That's really cool. That's a lot of replayability for a speedrunner. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah, and for the most part, they're different enough to keep it interesting. The Mario only categories feel a lot like the Toad only categories, just slower. So those, I believe, are the least popular. There are a couple people that really enjoy playing as Mario. Shout out Stewie Cartman, who's a great Mario 3 and Mario 2 runner. Actually, Mario 1 too. He's just an overall great Mario speedrunner.
A little bit of Mario everywhere.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people like playing Princess because that's the character they played as kids. A lot of people like playing as Luigi because he's goofy and they're Luigi fans, and it's easy to like Luigi.
I mean, he's just this lovable dork. It's who wouldn't love him?
Yeah. And then other people hate playing as Luigi. He has very floaty physics, and it becomes cumbersome to use in some areas. So it's a blessing sometimes when you need to jump over a bunch of nonsense, but if there are tighter spots where you need to be a bit more precise, Luigi can be an absolute liability. But I think you had also asked about the hardest categories.
Yeah, what are some of the harder ones?
Honestly, I think the princess-only categories are extremely difficult. I feel bad for players who start speedrunning princess-only because they think it's going to be easier. And there are sections that are very easy. You know, she can float over some sections. But with her slow pickup speed, certain boss fights can be difficult to do. And then the fastest tricks with Princess are very difficult compared to the typical characters you would use in some of the levels. There's a level 6-2 where, you know, the kind of dev intended way to go is to ride a bird across a big expansive abyss.
Yeah.
But there are ways that you can jump across different flying enemies and it looks very scary, but with Luigi, it ends up being pretty easy. But with Princess, she can also make the jumps, but it's a lot harder to do.
I could see that because from what I remember of the physics of the little I have played the game, Luigi keeps a consistent jump arc. If you just press and hold the jump button, he'll float, but it'll be consistent. With Peach, since she's floaty, I'm assuming she could probably go farther than like Luigi could in terms of distance to left.
I believe
right,
she does jump slightly farther than Luigi.
So I could picture I could picture a new runner panic and be like, oh, I got to get on this bird or this enemy so I can jump off again, and just panicking and going too far one direction. Mm-hmm. That would be me 100%.
Yeah. Princess has really complicated mechanics because you can set her float at different heights. So at any point before she gets to the top of her jump, if you let go of jump, you can then re-grab the jump button and float at that height. Okay. So you can float close to the ground, or you can just do a big old caveman jump and float at the top of your jump. But there are times where you need to be floating at a certain height and you need to be crouched so you're smaller. And it ends up being tricky to do the absolute fastest strats with, or, you know, strategies with Princess versus some of the other characters. But, you know, there are large sections of the game where using Princess is kind of cruise control mode and great for new runners.
That's interesting. I wouldn't, like you were saying, I would not have picked the quote unquote easiest character because she's easy to control to be the most difficult.
Yeah, I think most people would probably tell you Luigi is the most difficult.
Luigi.
You know, the all levels of Luigi only category is pretty challenging because there's a lot of digging in World 2. So
I forgot
all four characters
about that game mechanic. That's a thing in this. Very Dig Dug-esque.
Yeah, exactly. All four characters dig at the same speed, but Luigi falls slower. And so digging, you dig and then you fall, you dig and then you fall. And so it becomes very awkward with Luigi. And there's also a part where you have to run away from a Fanto or like a floating mask. Once you grab a key, it starts chasing you and you have to climb up back through the sand as Luigi. And he has really slow, clumsy jumps. And it's difficult to get out of that area without dying. When you kind of know what you're doing, it can be a pain.
Casually,
so those are kind of like my two candidates for hardest.
Casually, those key sections scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, they're just terrifying. Mm-hmm. So moving on a little bit from this, what are some of the swag strats in this game? Are there any strategies that are either super risky that most runners don't try because it loses too much time, or they're completely useless, but they're just cool to do?
So double jumping when you don't need to double jump is probably the most common swag strat, especially in the first level. There are about a billion opportunities to double jump off of enemies that you absolutely do not need to double jump off of.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone loses runs trying to do double jumps in 1-1 and then taking damage. It's a rite of passage. It happens. But if you can get a bunch of double jumps in a run, that's some street cred that several people might care about.
Not everyone, but several people will care.
Several people might care. And so in the NES version of the game, when you go from 2 HP to 1 HP and shrink to the small version of your character, everything else in the game kind of freezes, but also if it's in motion caused by you, stays in motion, if that makes sense. Like enemies that walk back and forth will freeze during the damage animation, but if you throw an enemy and then take damage, it keeps going.
Okay.
And so at the end of 4-1, you typically are Toad and you typically are carrying an enemy for the speed boost, and you grab an orb at the end to open up the door to exit the level. And so you need to throw the enemy. And so you typically just throw it straight forward, grab the orb, and then you just continue and take damage from that enemy you threw. And it ends up clipping into the ground because it's during that damage animation, it keeps going down. And ends up, halfway through the floor. And so, trapping that, Shy Guy or Flurry's soul inside of the ground is, probably the most common swag strat. We joke that a run is only valid if you do that.
Does it save any time to do that?
No, it also doesn't lose time, though. So that's kind of why it's the most common thing to do.
Okay. Okay, that's kind of funny, actually. So imagine, I'm just now picturing, like, it's, you know, how many runs people must do. There's just a graveyard of those things hidden in the geometry of the levels.
Yeah, it's like some of those memes, whatever memes you see. Yeah, like I've seen some memes about Mario World where they'll just be like a pit full of Yoshis because you can jump off of Yoshi to like in midair so you can jump again if you have a Yoshi. But that all kind of sacrifices the Yoshi into the pit.
But Grand Pooter has that. That's a running joke on his stream where he like will sacrifice any Yoshi he comes across. Yeah. If he has a way to kill the Yoshis, he will find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny.
There are plenty of things in the game that are incredibly difficult that only save a little bit of time that, you know, sometimes you'll go for just because you're not playing well, you're not going to beat your time. So you might as well go for broke and try some really sweaty strats. But
I like that description. There's a really sweaty strat. That's really good. Yeah. What are some of those? Like, you don't have to list all of them, what are some of the ones that are like super, super risky that most runners don't go for?
Yep. So in that same abyss level I talked about before, 6-2. So there's a fairly easy way to clear those gaps with Luigi. There's a way to clear the gaps that's about half a second faster and probably 10 times as hard, that sometimes you'll go for if you're, you know, in desperation mode to save a run. You know, it involves doing some double jumps. Luigi's double jump mechanics are weird. You can sometimes double jump when it doesn't seem like you should be able to double jump. Mm-hmm. And so you basically just jump across the air with Luigi, but there's some fairly precise D-pad manipulation to kind of spawn enemies where you need them. And, it's very easy to completely fail that and just die. But if you get it, that's a half a second that several people will care about.
I mean, once you get to once you get higher up in the rankings, I'm sure that's when it really comes into play.
Yeah,
all those stupid strategies that it's not worth it, but we got to go for mm-hmm. it.
So one thing I see new runners in the game do all the time is go for strats that are incredibly difficult. Maybe they're a frequent viewer of Cool Kid or someone, you know, at the absolute top of the game. And, you know, they think, okay, I got to do these strats to speed run this game, you know, and they end up doing a million runs, but they always die and lose a whole bunch of time. I always try and stress with new runners that alive is fastest, that Mario 2 is not a trivial game to beat. I lurk in a lot of streams where people do casual playthroughs and basically everyone ends in a rage quit.
Oh, I would be one of them.
Yeah. So like one thing I really wish new runners would do more of is just play it safe, stay alive, get your 10 and a half, 11 minute time, and then start peppering in some of the harder, sweatier strats as you get comfortable just beating the game consistently.
Yeah. I feel like that's a problem. I mentioned this with my episode in Spike, I want to say, and we can actually use this as a way to transition to, I think, something that would be interesting to talk about as well. But something I have sped run one game. I'm like fourth place in a PS1 game called Sledstorm, which is a snowmobile racing game. It's a good game. My biggest issue, not with the game, but with speedrunning, with my own speedrunning, is if I make one minuscule mistake, I not necessarily rage quit. I'm like, all right, let's start over. But that's mm-hmm. not a great strategy because then I'm not practicing the latter halves of the game, you know, latter portions of the game. So Spike gave some of his advice, but what's some advice you would give to prospective runners? You kind of mentioned before, just take your time and play through Super Mario Bros. 2, but what would you recommend for Super Mario Bros. 2 and just speedrunning in general?
Yeah, so in general, I would say just don't compare yourself to the, you know, super popular high-end speedrunners. Like if you want to run Mario 64 and are a fan of watching Cheese or Simply or someone, you know, you're used to seeing super difficult strats that look really cool, but just are not well suited for new players.
They look a lot easier than they actually are.
Yeah, or if you watch Mario 1 and you see, you know, Nifsky and Miniland do all these crazy tricks and you start doing those right from the get-go, you're just not going to finish many runs, and that's frustrating. So in general, regardless of what game you're playing, I would say beat the game as many times as you can when you're starting out. You know, you don't want to, you know, do runs for 3 hours, resetting over difficult strats, finally get through to the end level and then choke it all away because you haven't faced the final boss in 3 weeks. You know, So just beating the game and being super comfortable in the later stages, I think, is the single most important thing in basically every speedrun I've done. At least it might be different for some that I haven't, but yeah, just being confident, and it takes a long time to be confident, is important. So practice the end of the game a lot. You know, if you reset in the first level, it's not a huge deal. You just, you try again. But you might not get a ton of opportunities at the end game. Like, once you get competitive times, you probably aren't going to get a ton of chances to improve your time. So putting in as much work as you can early on in the later half of the game, whether that's doing runs without resetting, just playing through the whole thing no matter what happens, or whether it's using super safe strategies so that you get to the end of the game a lot, whatever you need to do, just, you know, get comfortable at the end game, because that's what makes and breaks runs. In Mario 2, the difference between a world record speedrunner contender versus someone in the bottom 10% of the leaderboard is primarily going to be in the later stages. It's just so easy to lose a ton of time when it's difficult to beat the game casually. When a game is easy to beat casually, just playing it casually tends to be fairly fast, you know. But the warp fight at the end in particular, every single mistake you make costs 4.2 seconds, just because you only get an opportunity to make a hit on warp every 4.2 seconds.
Oh, wow. So that really adds up fast if you're screwing up a whole bunch.
And a lot of, and even like a safe warp fight is going to lose 6 times 4.2 seconds. So like, what, 25 seconds versus an aggressive fight. And so you lose 25 seconds not being good at the warp fight. And that's if you don't make any mistakes on top of that. So you can very easily lose a minute just on the final boss. That should take, you know, 25 seconds to kill.
Wow. I've never made it to wart. I've gotten to a few before. Mario 2, just, I like the visuals of it. So wart was always such a fun villain to. I know that's not really related to what you were just talking about, but just kind of talking about wart got me thinking. But all right, so we're going to start wrapping this episode up. Are there any final things you'd like to talk about this game that I did not ask about, or any things that you're like really interested in with this that you would like more people to know?
No, I mean, I definitely wanted to get on my soapbox about it not strictly being a Doki Doki Panic reskin, but we kind of knocked that out right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning. Hey, that's I love video game history, as my listeners know. So that was a very welcome opening segment to the episode.
Yeah, and you had mentioned that the gaming historian has a good YouTube episode on this game, and that covers most of it. John Irwin has a book. I think it's just called Mario Brothers 2 or Super Mario Brothers 2 or something. And he goes into much more depth about sort of the early workings, kind of. And I don't want to say like the video gaming historian episode is like wrong, but there are a couple things that I think he doesn't quite get in order, like the timeline's slightly off. So the John Irwin book is really good about kind of going over all those early details. So if that part of this episode interests anyone, I would definitely recommend that book.
How do you spell Irwin by any chance? Is it
I-R-W-I-N. And I believe it's John without an H.
Okay. Okay, yeah, you're right. J-O-N. Oh, it's from Boss Fight Books. That is a great website. I actually, they sent me a review copy of a Final Fantasy VI book a little bit ago. Wow, it's only $5 for the ebook. That's
steal.
That's pretty great. Yeah, it's $15 for a paperback. I might check that out then, because I love Boss Fight Books. Makes a lot of publishes a lot of amazing books on video games. The most recent one was Final Fantasy VI, but That's good to know. So John Irwin, Boss Fight Books, for those who are interested, go check them out.
Yeah, so that'd be my recommendation for anyone that wants a little bit more about the history. If you want to learn more about the speedrun, the Summoning Salt episode is really good. It's, you know, now a little bit outdated. The record's been improved a bit, but it does a good job kind of covering the history of speedrunning Mario 2. And then otherwise, there are some really good tutorials out there for learning how to play Mario 2. Cool Kid, the top player in the game, has a really good beginner's tutorial that came out maybe about half a year ago. For if you're just starting to get into the game, I have more of an intermediate to advanced tutorial out as well. And so if speedrunning isn't quite your cup of tea, but you don't want to play the same game over and over again, there's a randomizer for Mario 2 that's a lot of fun too.
Really?
It's made by Macobra, Macobra, and then 52. You know, he's done a lot of great work in the Mario 3 community as well. But if you just search Macobra 52 GitHub, you'll be able to find his repository and the randomizer app. It's great. You can do as little as giving yourself extra lives and continues, or as much as shuffling level order, boss HP, sprite colors, the whole nine yards. It's a great app. I was about to ask.
So for those who don't know what a randomizer is in a video game, it's an awesome mod. And in a nutshell, it's a mod of an existing game where things get switched up. The place where I first saw it, and I would argue probably a lot of people first saw it, but I don't really know. Link to the Past, to the Past, and Super Metroid. Basically, you know, and if you play Link to the Past normally, every chest you open, the same thing is going to be in that chest every single time. You know, a rupee in this chest, you know, the hook shot in this chest, so on and so forth. Randomizer just switches all that up. So players have to go to places that have the most, the densest population of chests to open in the hopes that they're going to get an item that's beneficial for them to finish the run. So since there's not really a lot of items in Mario 2, I was curious how they would do a randomizer for that. But you answered it. Switches up the amount of lives that you might get or that you might find throughout the levels, switches up the level order. That's really cool. So That's interesting. I wonder how many other different... I've seen some other more randomizers recently of just like there was one... I don't know if it's really a randomizer, but it was on... actually, the week we're recording this is Frost Fatales on GDQ. Mm-hmm. And they had one where it was DuckTales and DuckTales 2, and it would just randomly switch levels on them, like mid-jump sometimes.
Oh,
so geez. So that could potentially fuck them up real bad and drop them right into a hole. But yeah, that's really cool. I did not know that. Anything else you'd like to shout out, though, before we get to the plugs?
Just huge shout-outs to the Mario 2 community. It's a super drama-free group. Everyone's very welcoming to new folks, encouraging of each other. You know, we like to roast each other a little bit from time to time, but pretty much just the people that we're friendly with and know well enough to do that. But yeah, it's a great community. It's, you know, a little bit of an older community by speedrunning standards. average age is probably... you know, early 30s, it would probably be average, but you know, there are young runners. One of the top runners, Lucidus, I think she's like 22 or so. Adam Ferrari is another top runner. I think he's like 23 or so. A lot of the runners are like 30 to 35, myself included. But yeah, they're great. A lot of my best friends are in this community, and you know, I have a lot of thanking I need to do just to the community for, you know, pulling me out of some couple rough spots.
Where could people get involved with that community? Where's the best place to find this community?
So there is an official Mario speedrunning Discord that is linked on the speedrun.com page for Mario 1, Mario 2, and Mario 3. I think there's a tab for Discord or something, or forum, or no, the forums are separate. There should be a Discord link there that you can, you know, that's a good starting place. There's also links to all the tutorials on speedrun.com. That would be step one. And then just getting yourself, you know, you don't have to invest in like a full original NES setup with high def mods and an EverDrive Pro to, you know, this and that. Like, you can just start on a laptop with a free emulator and, you know, there are, you can get top times in this game on emulator. That's not a problem at all. So you don't need to invest a lot financially to speedrun this game. You know, you can just kind of pick it up and see if you enjoy it. Yeah, that would be my recommendation for where to start.
All right. And then where can everybody find you online? Well, any social media you'd like to promote or anything else that you'd like to promote?
Yeah, I mean, my YouTube channel is pretty lame, but if you wanted to throw me a follow on Twitch, way to I'd sell appreciate it. That.
My YouTube channel sucks. Go give me a subscribe. Go subscribe. Click like and subscribe.
Yeah, please like, share, comment.
There you go.
But yeah, I stream on Twitch. My username is Kurtz New Brand, CURTSNEWBRAND. You know, I'm pretty easy to find on there. You know, I host weekly randomizer races on Sundays for the community.
Ooh, so I'll have to watch that.
Restream those. I've held a speedrunning tournament now, and there's going to be another one in May. Anyone's welcome to join that if you're interested. It's going to be an all levels tournament. You know, it has cash prizes for top three as well as one random participant outside of the top three. So even if you don't think you have a chance to win, there's incentive to join.
Don't let anybody tell you can't make money off of video games is the moral of this entire episode, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So my first event was in December and spilled into January a little bit. And that was a lot of fun to host and organize. So I'm definitely looking forward to event two. But yeah, drop me a follow on Twitch if you want to see some. Well, for the next couple of weeks, at least, it'll probably be Mario 3 content. But returning to Mario 2 is inevitable. It is my weakness.
It is inevitable.
Yeah,
that's funny. All right, so as for me, as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me at stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do so in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts / whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show and it makes me feel nice and warm and fuzzy. And if you want to support the show monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And for that dollar, you'll get access to episodes a few days early at a higher bitrate, as well as access to a patron exclusive Discord. For $5 a month, you'll get all of that plus 2 extra bonus episodes a week, or not a week. Oh my God, that would be insane. 2 extra bonus episodes a month. So patreon.com/stillloadingpod. But the most important shout out I have is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for this episode of Still Loading. Kurt, thank you so much for joining me.
And thank you again for having me.
And I will see you all next time.